Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. We've got an interesting idea for today's episode. We did an episode last week on disenfranchised men. Maybe you heard it. Maybe you didn't. If you did, maybe you yelled at us.
Because everyone is pissed at us.
Everyone is pissed at us right now.
So we're going to look again at what do we do with disenfranchised men on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm Naz Jantavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
I'm Daniel Carroll, or Dan in short.
Last week, we spoke to Andrew Yarrow. He is a former New York Times reporter, and he's written this fantastic book called Man Out, which is about American men on the sidelines of society. Basically, one of our co-producers, Sam Baker, she joined us, and loads of you have written to us, and yeah, people are annoyed, I think.
Yeah, people have, you think? These emails are not happy emails, not what I would consider typical fan mail, very critical.
No, but there are some really good points, and we have one of our listeners, Alex, joining us. Alex, how's it going? Where are you?
It's going great. I feel good that I'm not the only one that sent you guys anything. I feel less crazy. I'm just in my apartment in New York doing great.
Wicked. So, Alex, we're going to come to you in a minute because you had some interesting thoughts. Okay, so basically this episode, we're just going to go straight into it. Let's get some housekeeping out of the way. So Sam and Johnny, our two co-producers, they are doing next week's episode. And actually, Dan and I have no idea what it is, and I'm super excited.
I'm kind of nervous.
A little bit scared.
Yeah. Why won't they tell us?
Well, because I kind of said it could be a surprise.
So do you know what it is?
I have no idea what it is. And actually, whenever we've had an editorial meeting here in London, because they are both in London, that they've, well, Sam's got quite giggly and Johnny's given her a knowing look. So part of me is a little bit worried.
Do we get to listen to it before it goes live?
No, I think it should go live.
I trust them. It's fine.
No, I trust them. It's just, it should just go live and then we'll see.
God, what if they just tear us to pieces? I mean, whatever.
Man, you got to trust your team. So anyway, so you will be hearing from Sam and Johnny next week, and Dan and I will be back the week after that. So yeah, we're looking forward to that.
We've got a Patreon. You can find the links in the show notes or on our website. And we're doing a new thing with that, where if you become a super or mega fan of that, I will write jokes for you. I can send them to you in a voice memo. If you want really bad, I can like dig through your social media and roast you.
No,
I
don't, that's weird.
I don't want to do that, but some people like that. Some people like to get, you know, jabs. It won't be anything mean, and I won't creep their Facebook. But
I don't know. But so if you sign up to be a super or mega fan by the end of the month, so by the end of November, yeah, Dan is gonna.
Oh yeah, you got 15 days.
He'll send you a joke. No, don't say that because this goes out on Monday.
Oh yeah.
So you've got a week and a half.
Okay.
Sorry, was I bossing you around?
No.
I feel really embarrassed because now we have a guest singing. We should keep that in.
We will.
So you've got.
I'm editing. I can do whatever I want.
You've got a week and a half to sign up to get a joke from Dan. Also, write to us. We've been getting loads of mail, not just about this, not just about disenfranchised men and how we piss people off, but write to us. We're really keen to get listeners more involved in the show. We especially want to hear from men about topics that are affecting men. So it's thegendernot@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, thegendernot.com, and there's a form there. Also, voice memos are great. So yeah, send us voice memos. Actually, maybe I shouldn't say that because people will send like 15 minutes of.
Yeah, if you send a voice memo, keep it to 2 minutes.
Yeah, cool. So send us super short voice memos as well. Wicked. So as we said last week, we were looking at what do we do with disenfranchised men. We spoke to Andrew Yarrow, who's written Man Out, about men on the sidelines of American society. So a bunch of you have written in. First, let's just give a little bit of background on us. So I am based in the UK. I'm in London. So I am a journalist, and I started this podcast largely because I was seeing a lot of issues with men around me. And I was like, someone needs to do something about this. So to be honest, that is a large part of doing this podcast. So it's not just about masculinity and femininity, but it's like, I think a lot of men are suffering and they don't really know what to do. So it's like, oh, let's try and sort this out.
And my name is Daniel again, and I live in Los Angeles, California, though I have also lived in a car in Seattle, Washington, and in Central Park, meaning I have spent a lot of my time not in the best places. I am a recovering alcoholic. I am diagnosed with bipolar, and a big part of my life these days, even though I sound very aggressive sometimes, is actually helping newer people navigate how to find recovery from addiction. And one of the reasons I do this podcast is because as a guy who, you know, took a long time to figure life out, I take a lot of joy in helping other people figure it out sooner than I did.
Okay, so we're going to come to some of the stuff we said last week, because I'm going to be honest, I listened back on Monday after we put it out, and I was a little bit concerned. I felt like I sounded like, I don't know, Jeff Bezos or something.
Who's my hero? He's absolutely my hero. I think Jeff Bezos is the second coming, and he will save us all.
Are you being serious?
Huh?
No,
I just love Amazon Prime, and I always joke that Bezos is our Lord and Savior.
Well, yeah, I guess being from Seattle. But yeah, so when I listened back, I was a bit concerned because I feel like we didn't really specify what we were talking about. So we're going to come to that in a second. First, let's just get some of the stuff you guys have said out of the way, and then we'll bring Alex on and we'll just really dig in. So we heard from Thomas from the Midwest in the US. He asked, how do you define having your shit together? In this episode and others, you generalize a group of men in this way or similarly, but never go deeper into the specific traits you meet. As for having your shit together, is this a financial metric? Is it a career metric? Are we talking about having a 5-year plan, a 401k, etc.? I think more clarification would help the argument and separate personal preference when it comes to a partner. An additional thing to consider as it comes to changing roles in the workforce is that time when a smart, strong, successful woman marries a dumb jock for arm candy. You all spoke of disenfranchisement as a very general term. It would be interesting to break it down further into how someone is disenfranchised. For example, incels, involuntary celibacy, or the underemployed. What does the Venn diagram look like, and can studying that provide insight into solutions?
Next, we have Danielle from Western Canada. She said, I think that right now a lot of misogynistic men's rights groups are building their ranks talking about very real men's issues, and that if we don't start caring as a society, that they will only grow. I also think that with the rise in male suicide since the 70s, I'd have to check, and the more recent opioid crisis, that this is just taking too many lives to be ignored. In my part of the world, men's life expectancies are actually decreasing due to opioid overdoses. I think that men's mental health is a societal issue. As a society, we find it so much easier to fight for gender equality for women by telling them to be stronger, but we don't tell men to be softer. And then she went on for a little while, and then she wrapped with, basically, what I'm trying to say is, as a society, we are building a world where men's roles haven't changed. And we as a society are creating this world that devalues certain men and then blames them for their low self-worth. I think we can do better and should do better.
We also got a really interesting voice memo from one of our listeners in the Netherlands.
Hello, Ness and Dan. My name's Mentor. I'm one of your listeners from the Netherlands. I got to start by saying that I am not a disenfranchised man, and as far as I know, I don't know any. In your previous episode, it was mentioned that these disenfranchised men should get their shit together. If you just forget for a second that we're talking about disenfranchised men and just call about depressed people, and while people are not entirely helpless, they definitely need help when they're in a dark spot like that. Sometimes that comes from friends, sometimes they need a therapist, and sometimes they need some chemical assistance. And saying that marginalized groups in the past stood up for themselves and mobilized, and that these people should do the same, if you forget for a second that we're talking about a gender topping and just look at depressed people, would you really say that depressed and suicidal people, would you really tell them that they should stand up, mobilize, and fight for their rights? And what I feel is that these disenfranchised people basically have a situation where their biological and societal needs are not being met. And that's a form of pain. And psychological pain is real. It's not physical, but it's real. And just imagine if someone would be electrocuted 24/7, low level, not enough to not be able to go to work, but enough to be in constant pain. It puts you in a fight-flight kind of situation. And I'm not sure if you've encountered a cat in a corner, but it's not going to be very nice. You know, about these men complaining about, you know, not having advocates or no one standing up for them. I would say think of them like a depressed friend who's complaining about how sucky life is. You know, it's they're in a certain frame of mind, and it's not your responsibility to take them out, but you can't expect them to figure it out by themselves.
Awesome. So that is one of our listeners in the Netherlands, and we have Alex from New York. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great. It's really fun to sit in and hear you guys record this. I just kind of feel like I'm listening to the podcast.
Well, Alex, you sent us a massive long email, which I was like, okay, we should get this dude on. So I just want to quickly start by, I want to say to Tom, because Tom asked about how do we define getting your shit together. Okay, so my personal definition is kind of being proactive about your life. So I don't know, Dan, what your definition is, but for me, like, yeah, having your shit together means that when problems arise, you try to sort them out. And I don't mean you go off on your own, but maybe you speak to people, maybe you go get professional help, maybe you join a group that gives support for people who are having those problems. It means kind of just being proactive about what's going on in your life. That's kind of my definition.
Yeah, I think to me, it just means you're not a drain on everyone around you.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
So you're kind of making an effort.
Right. And that
it doesn't mean things have to be perfect,
you can't rely on social services, but it means,
exactly,
you know, whatever you're doing, you know, try to be conscious about it. You know what I mean? Like, don't take more than you need and don't fucking take it at the expense of someone else.
So, okay, when we listened back, I was a little bit concerned because, as Tom said, we didn't really define what we were talking about. So, okay, Okay, so how I see this is that I like to think I have, I like to think I am compassionate in terms of a social, to a certain extent, right? Like, I am into social justice and stuff. I think there's like different types of disenfranchisement, and Yarrow talks about, he talks about men being disenfranchised due to the economy, due to the culture changing, and like due to lots of different factors. I feel like there's like two different groups here. There's, you know, men who are disenfranchised because the world is changing really fast and they're being left behind, and that's really unfair. And, you know, the economy's changing and stuff. And there's also guys who then don't want to do anything about it. And a lot of my comments was about the second group. And when I say doing something about it, it doesn't mean you have to have a solution, but you're kind of trying to actively take part rather than going on the internet and being angry or, like, you know, voting for far-right candidates or whatever. But, yeah. So, Alex, you had lots of thoughts about our conversation.
The first and the main thing was that line about compassion. And I just was like, I know that's not what Naz thinks because I've listened to the podcast a lot, but the phrase "I don't have a lot of compassion," I think, was the thing that made me want to send in. But just when you responded to my message, something that stuck out to me was this division. And at first I was thinking, oh yeah, that's right. We can really just feel for the first group and like tell the second group to go sort of,
get their shit together.
Yes. Thank you. But I was like, moderate, don't say bad words. But the more I thought about it, I kept coming back to, I just want to name drop the name Susan Faludi because I think she's a genius, and Andrew Yarrow, he seemed like a really smart guy. I know that he is, but a lot of what he was talking about, I think she was talking about 20 years ago. And sorry, this will make sense, but to reference the listener you had from Western Canada, these are issues that actually do go back to the 70s. And in Faludi's book, Stift, she references the fact that men are far more likely to commit suicide. And interestingly, men are far more likely to have trouble if a relationship breaks up. Studies, at least from the mid 80s to the mid 90s, found that men are far more impacted by the loss of a partner often than women are. It sends men into a state of not feeling like they have a direction in their lives, which I think is a really interesting way in which we emphasize male independence, but it doesn't bear itself out in fact. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So that's all to say that I would love for there to be two discrete groups that we could be like, oh, let's help these poor guys who are disenfranchised because of time, and let's make these other guys get their shit together. But the more mm-hmm. I thought about it, I think that Venn diagram is almost pretty close to a circle, because like you don't get into that second group without being a member of the first group. And in a lot of ways, the economic changes that they're being disenfranchised by are the rise of women in the workplace, are the rise of people of color in the workplace and having rights and all that stuff. So I don't know, when you said, and this isn't on you guys, but just the tone of the conversation on the last piece, it troubled me because I don't think we can easily, sorry, that's my cat. I don't think we can easily separate these two groups of men. And since we can't separate them, I totally get the urge to just sort of go on 4chan and shut down 4chan and find all of these guys that say these horrible things and these MRA activists and find them and like corral them and make them read Simone de Beauvoir until their eyes bleed. But like, I just don't think, I said shame a lot in my response to you guys. I just don't think that shaming them is the best way forward.
Well, so I really quickly want to say about compassion, because I feel like I go on about this on this podcast. I feel the sort of like being compassionate is something that is often used to make women shut up and not assert their rights. And so that's where it gets tricky. Yarrow gave the example in the conversation with Sam about, you know, there's all these guys who in their sort of later years, they drop out of the workforce and they're not looking for jobs and they're not helping out at home and they're in the basement watching porn and talking to other women and their wives get sick. I kind of think like that is something that happens with women. It's kind of like you're meant to always feel sorry for the fact that this guy isn't well and has issues, but he's not going to make any effort. And that's where I'm kind of weary of being overly of women being overly compassionate. Because I think it's often a way to get women to not assert themselves. Like there's a difference between like, you know, and I've had this with guys in my life. There's guys where, you know, I will be compassionate towards them and they will also make an effort to take my help and to take my suggestions and to step in. And there's guys where like they just want compassion so that you shut up and they can just do whatever they want. I don't know. And I feel like Dan, you might have a lot of experience with this given the work you do.
Yeah. I mean, my thought is that compassion is fantastic, but I create a clear line where I'm able to be compassionate and also withdrawn. You know, if somebody wants help, I make it 100% available day or night, 24 hours, doesn't matter. But if somebody doesn't want help, I have no problem walking away from that situation.
Well, because also like Yarrow talked about, he said in that interview about how like, you know, there's all these guys who don't have advocates and they don't have any groups anymore, and they go on about how like it's the women who keep the Rotary Club going. And so like, even though theoretically I have a lot of sympathy for like men not having outlets, then when you look at like the reality, me being a woman seeing this, and then Yarrow saying stuff like, yeah, you know, men are saying my wife keeps this group going, then it's kind of back to like, well, yeah, why should I care so much?
Right.
You know,
I mean, as somebody who's, again, like been in really bad places and really like out there, people could give me as much help as they could give me, and all I was going to do was abuse that help.
Right.
It wasn't until I got to a place where I wanted to change because I needed to change and I had to change that I actually started to make positive use of help. And at that point, the extended help was gone. Like, it was gone. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. My parents weren't talking to me. I didn't have any friends left. I was a loner. Shit was awful. But when I made a decision to do something different with my life and actually pick up some pieces, help was there. I found it. I went to it. I sought it out. Now, I'm not saying that help is around every corner in this awful world we live in 2018, but there is help. And if we seek it, it's available. And if anyone is listening to this show and needs it, feel free to call me. I'm around. But my point is that, like, you can't make someone want help. I can't make a disenfranchised man want help. And what you're saying is very similar with the idea that we can't shame them into it. Just like I can't shame them into it, I can't bait them into it either. I can't make it look more appealing to be less of a jerk to women. You know what I mean? I just have to live by example. And if they see that and they want it, they can come talk to me and ask me how I do it.
Absolutely. I think what both of you have said is spot on and absolutely right. And I completely agree, Naz, that the shitty thing about bringing up compassion to you is that it sounds like, hey.
I'm really, like, sensitive about it. It's like my Achilles heel. I'm very sensitive.
No, for good reason. Like, I know from my own personal experience of myself and from men in my family that, yeah, we will seek that compassion just so we don't have to do anything anymore. And it's, right. I think it's the same as when white people feel just so bad if they've done something that feels even remotely problematic to a person of color, they just immediately, and I have done this, like, crawl and be like, please forgive me, please. Because it's the forgiveness, and then it's, oh, I don't have to think about it anymore.
So, right, right.
So when I think about compassion for these men, part of me feels less like it's an individual compassion, less like you, Naz, or you, Dan, must go and mm-hmm. find an incel and be very kind to them and get them a milkshake. I think of it as societally, we have a weird obsession still with men mm-hmm. manning up. And that specific language and saying, like,
get your shit together.
Yeah, get your shit together in this particularly aggressive way where, mm-hmm. like, I totally get how annoying your husband must be if he is in the basement endlessly watching porn and Cheetos and, like, chatting on, what is that? Like, Ashley Madison, the cheating dating website mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to figure out a way that it's not like, oh, his wife needs to just treat him with this sweet compassion and disregard her own feelings. We need to figure out a way to make it okay for that guy to walk out and be like, hey, I've been doing this. What should I do? Because I know,
this is really my question here. And I go on and on about this on this podcast, but why can't guys help each other? Because there was a really good point Sam made during our conversation where she was talking about how Yarrow said that, you know, these guys, they don't have advocates and, you know, they don't have groups. And Sam was like, well, who are they waiting for? I think her exact words were, who are they waiting for? Which I think is great. It's like everyone else has had to get help. And I feel like a lot of these groups, like women or like LGBT people and stuff, I'm sure a lot of these groups are very open to someone going up to them, a man being like, hey, you know, we're facing X problem. We would love to learn from you or get some tips from you on how to organize ourselves. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if some guys come up to me and ask me that, I am totally up for helping out. But if they expect me to do that for them, what am I meant to, like, run their Rotary Club for them? Like, dude, I've got things to be doing. And everyone else has when I say get your shit together, that's my point. I'm like, you know, all these other groups have managed to, they haven't really had a choice. They've not had anyone do that for them. So they have had to do that for themselves. So I do find it, well, I don't know, man.
I agree and disagree. I mean, I agree that people have had to do things for themselves, but, like, if we look at, like, just civil rights, like, I think without white men standing up and saying, yeah, we should be doing this, the amount of voices that were heard would not have been heard.
No, but that's different from, it's different from non-white people expecting white people to set up a group for them and do most of the work.
I think you're absolutely right, Naz, but I think, Dan, I hear what you're saying, which is that the strange thing about men organizing themselves is that we don't really have a political structure for people that are currently viewed to be in power, and certainly the people that are in power are men, but whether we would say that men as a large group are truly empowered, I think we could have a long discussion about that. But we don't have a structure, a sort of idea politically of what it would look like for a group of men to stand up and say, like, what would we even call it? Dan, if you have any ideas of what we would call it, I would love them. But like,
why can't you create that? Because this is where this is where I start to kind of
I think it exists,
patience.
And it's called like the Freemasons.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
No, but this is where I'm just like, why can't all of you guys, many of whom are extremely smart and, you know, have, you know, why can't you guys get together and try
Honestly,
and figure this out
I
together?
I think a big part of the problem is that we're saying that men need to help other men. And frankly,
yes, exactly.
Like, and frankly,
why aren't you
like,
doing that?
Like, well, frankly, like, it wasn't just other men that helped me. Do you know what I mean? Like, definitely, yes, men were involved, but like, why does it have to be like that? Only men are helping men, and only women are helping women. Like,
no,
why
I'm
can't
not
we
saying
all just
that,
be
but you're,
cool?
You're expecting women to do most of the work. I think that's the problem. When I'm hearing that, like, oh, my wife keeps this Rotary Club going, and when he said that, I just laughed because I can think of so many examples in life where it's like, oh, the women have to keep all the shit together.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So I'm not saying like only men must only talk to each other. I'm like, yeah, why don't you also talk to each other and get help from women? I just don't see this point of like women need to come and like, you know, sort this out for men.
Well,
like,
my point is that help doesn't come in the form of physically doing things for other people, right? It's that whole teach a man to fish thing, right? Like help comes when I have tools and I show you how to use them and then you use them. And so I'm not on board with the whole, like, you know, women keeping the Rotary Club running or whatever. But the idea that, like, someone needs help and I go, here's how I did it. And then they either go do
and
it
I
or
think
they don't.
Women have been saying this for ages. And in fact, a lot of the problems to do with masculinity and especially to do with sort of like, how do we raise boys? What happens to boys today in today's, like, you know, the futurist female world? It's women who are starting these conversations. It's women who are trying to help boys out. Like, women are doing so much of this work already. And then guys are still kind of, you know, expecting more. That's kind of what's annoying. I don't think women are saying, well, in any relationship, women are very happy to help their male partners or their male friends. But there's a difference between that and between them doing all of the work.
Well, I will say I saw Michelle Obama last night on her book tour. And she was talking very much about how her father and her brother did such a good job with her and making her feel included and being good men in her life and how men need to do that for young girls as well. So when we're talking about women raising little boys to be better, that definitely goes both. Like, that's my point, is that I think we need the opposite. We need the influence of both sexes.
Right.
I think this connects to something that, Dan, that I know that I rather cruelly gave you some shit for in my
you're
response.
Fine.
But
you're
said,
not the first person to call me a dick.
I know, but you're like not.
I was like, Dan, everyone's calling you a dick.
And it's such a gendered insult. It's cruel on many levels. But what you said, like, we need to wait for these guys to die. And at the moment, I was like, no, this will solve, death solves nothing. But the more I thought about it, I was like, shit, he's right. Because, Nas, I completely agree with you. We can't ask women to be like, I can't have women fix this for me. But in something that you noted in my response was, male mentors of mine have almost uniformly sucked. Single mother raised me to be a better man than any of the men in my life ever have, because she would continuously tell me to literally fight the Y chromosome. And she would just ask me to be thoughtful in a way that the men in my life literally explicitly were not. My stepfather once turned to me and said, Alex, never let them see your weakness. It will only make you vulnerable and they will hurt you. And so we do need to figure out a way to raise boys differently in a way that erases what he said to me and says that, you know what, the way to be a good man is to be a good human being and to be vulnerable and be open to actually come with your problems. And a thing that I am still learning always is to listen, to shut up and listen sometimes. So Naz, I totally hear you that women are asked to do too much work, but I honestly have had women teach me how to be a better man far more than any of the men in my life ever have.
So actually, it's interesting you say this because there is a bit in your email that I highlighted in red because I was like, ooh, this is the key bit. You said, I'm going to quote you back to yourself. You said that I, as a man, have had basically zero male mentors that have helped me out, but I've always had women helping me. That is terrible. Men do not help men the way women help other women because men are expected to get their shit together and man up individually and figure it out quite cruelly. And for me, it was interesting reading that because I'm like, I think this is the crux of the problem. And the other reason is that as much as I talk a lot of shit about men on this show, a lot of like the best emotional support I've had in my life has come from men. And so for me, it is interesting that like, there have been so many guys who have been fantastic in my emotional life and helping me. And why are they not doing that to each other? I don't know. It does make me wonder because I don't think it is that. I don't know. I do wonder about that.
Yeah, I wish to God I had an answer, but I can tell you that I have been a person who has listened to and tried to help. Like, I have a lot more female friends that I'm close to that I could express heavy emotional stuff, and they could express that. I would hope, I think they express that heavy emotional stuff to me far more than any men that I know. And I'm actually kind of, when it's a group of men, I'm uncomfortable around them.
But wait, Dan, what about you? Because I'm wondering, why don't men help each other out? Or do they? I don't know, because I feel
some do, some don't. I mean, I think there's this idea that you're not supposed to, right? And I'm so glad someone agrees with me. That needs to just die. Because here's the thing. We can't change how people think, right? People can change how people think, but we can't change it for them. And we can't
but we can influence
them. We can't make them want to do it. We can definitely influence them, but we can't make them want to do it. They have to see it in us and choose it for themselves and then ask how to do it. That's the only way I've done it. That's the only way I've ever seen anyone else do it. You get to a point in life where the fucking clouds part for half a second, you go, oh man, there's a better way to live. And then you make a decision and walk in that direction and ask strangers for help along the way. And people are either going to do that or they're not. And we need to help them if they want to. And we need to, you know, let them live and do whatever the fuck they want and try to stop them from harming others. Just, I mean, at this point, it's just damage control, right? It's harm reduction.
Yeah, I feel that a lot. I feel, so this is the other thing about like, about trying to understand kind of some of these really disenfranchised guys. I am really against this sort of thing that especially I see this especially in the US, less in the UK, of like this thing where liberals are like, let's understand the other side. It's like, you don't need to understand white supremacists. You don't need to understand super sexist people. Like, get the hell out of the way. Sociologists and like political scientists, they can go understand those people, but like everyday citizens, get the hell out of the way and protect yourself. So like whenever I see these kind of like, you know, people in the New York Times or whatever being like, let's speak to some Nazis and understand, F that, because they're not going to understand you. These are all the people who never show any compassion to anyone else. So I will stop ranting. I feel that in this conversation where it's like try and understand this abusive man, like, hey, woman, try and understand this abusive. I'm like, no, get the F out of the way. Protect yourself. You know, you don't have. Yeah. Yeah.
And I will admit that this is maybe where I show my hyper lefty colors. But like my response is those New York Times op-eds are a pandering to the Fox News version of understanding.
Right, exactly.
People.
And I'm like, you don't need to extend a hand. You don't need to extend an olive branch to people who have zero interest in playing along.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think we need to extend an olive branch so much as we just need to have pictures of olive trees places with maps on how to get to them, and then you can go find the fucking branch yourself.
That feels more on point to me because I don't want you as Naz to be a person that has to like understand them, but like if I hear an incel spouting incel shit, I want to, or I hope that if it won't endanger other people, I would say something to that person and reject those things while also understanding that he came to be that way, if that makes sense. I guess that's my traditionally liberal
that's safe.
Guy.
But that's safe for you because you're a male. It's
true.
Safe for you to understand a fellow
true,
male
true.
Who has those kind of feelings. Whereas for me, it's like, okay, I get some shitty stuff happened to this guy. if he wants to, like, you know, make an effort and reach out, I'm here. If he's going to be, like, potentially abusive, I'm getting the F out of the way and I'm not going to feel guilty or feel like I'm not being compassionate or, you know, whatever.
Compassion looks just as good from across the street, in my opinion. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm telling you, some of the most compassionate things that have ever been done for me are people walking away from me. Because right. What that tells me is that I am so fucked right now.
Right.
And if I don't do something, I'm never going to have an honest connection with another person again. And that is a life-changing place to be. And so I think, you know, saying get out of the way, go save yourself is so compassionate, right?
It's to the other person.
To the other person.
Harmful person.
Absolutely. It's so compassionate. It's so much more helpful to them than leaning in and going, let me take care of you and let you harm me. Because that does
nothing. And let you off the hook.
That does nothing for them. They grow in no way, shape, or form. All it does is enable them and create dependence and just spirals the situation even worse. And I'm not saying that's everybody, but I'm saying the ones that we're talking about right now. All that does is just keep it spinning.
Guys, I'm going to wrap up.
Great.
No. Is that okay? No, because I feel like this is, I have a good wrap up point.
Yeah, I would go way too deep if we kept going. So it's good that we're stopping.
So just on that point, I'm going to say, you should all, guys should join men's groups and guys like you should run them and help other guys out.
Yeah, I'm in. You're all welcome to reach out to me directly.
Alex, I'm giving you an assignment. as a guest on this episode, is to like rope some guys to get together and talk about the issues and reach out to all these other guys so that women like me don't have to be in danger, you know?
Right. I can take that assignment. I have other work to do. I can include this as part of it.
And if there's one thing guys should have learned from listening to the show is to join a men's group. I feel like that's what everyone tells me.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Dan. That's Naz. Our guest today was Alex from New York.
Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. They will be taking over the episode next week. So Dan and I will speak to you in December.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Bye.
See ya.